Shock the System. Welcome to Dank Discussions with your host, Calican CEO, Maynard Breslow. In each episode, you'll learn from the trailblazers, leaders, entrepreneurs, and influencers in the ever-moving, ever-growing cannabis industry.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome to Dank Discussions. Today, we're joined by Stanley Atkins II. Stanley is the CEO and founder of the Cannamedic and the Stanley Group LLC. So thanks for joining us today, Stanley.
Man, thanks for having me on. I look forward to it. It's a pleasure.
The pleasure's all mine. The honor's all mine. You know, really grateful to have you on. You know, you have a very tremendous, very inspirational story, background, you know, personally and you know, in the cannabis industry, obviously. So today, we're going to talk about that. And we're going to talk about a few topics that are also very important, such as mental health advocacy, the stigma associated with that and how it connects with cannabis, military veterans and how, you know, how people can get benefits out through cannabis and also harm reduction. So a lot to cover, a lot to talk about today. So we'll have a good conversation, a dank discussion, as we say. But, you know, I always say as well that we'll start it off easy, right? So let our listeners know where you're based out of today.
I am based out of Atlanta, Georgia, here in the United States, from a little small town or small city called Griffin, Georgia, right outside the metro Atlanta area.
Sweet. Awesome. And, you know, talk to me a little bit about Atlanta, how things are going in Atlanta in terms of cannabis, you know, Georgia as well, in terms of medical, recreational, getting that stuff going, obviously, and just kind of the feel that you have, right? It's still the South. Right, but I think it's moving a little bit more. So you kind of get a little bit of both worlds, right?
Yes, absolutely. One thing that a lot of people in the industry do understand that Atlanta really does help push cannabis culture. And a lot of it ties back to Hollywood and, you know, famous people and actors and a lot of entertainers, especially the rap culture. A lot of brands get Atlanta rappers to endorse their strains, which helps promote sales and, you know, makes it viral. They rap about it in their songs. So Atlanta has a real close finger on the pulse of cannabis culture. We are not a legal state, which in an adult use market, we are still black market. But we do have, I think, about 12 to 13 cities that are decriminalized, and Atlanta is one of them. So in Atlanta, if you do have up to an ounce of cannabis on your person, instead of being arrested, it is a $75 civil fine. Doesn't go on your record, similar to a jaywalking ticket. I haven't really met many people that have actually been ticketed for it, but officers can ticket you for it. And as far as the medical cannabis is concerned, Georgia does have a current operating medical cannabis program. It's been up and running since about 2015. We have a total of 17 clinical conditions that are covered in our program. They range from amyotrophic lateral sclerosis to MS, cancer, AIDS, PTSD, seizures. We also have Tourette's, Alzheimer's. So we have a slew of conditions. We were recently able to get Crohn's added, as well as intractable pain. And for anyone who doesn't know what intractable pain is, a lot of legislators don't like using the terminology chronic pain. So they use the term intractable pain. And that means a pain that has not been successfully treated by conventional therapeutic methods. And so since the conventional pharmacological agents or the medications haven't been working, that puts you in the category for intractable pain. We have about 17,000 registered patients currently here in the state of Georgia. But that leaves us at a paradox. In 2019, we successfully were able to pass HB 324, which is our medical cannabis cultivation bill. In this bill, it was going to allow for 6 licenses within the state of Georgia to cultivate medical cannabis for the production of low THC oil. So our program does not allow for a smokable flower. For people who may not know what that is, your joints or your cannabis that may come in a jar or a container, we don't allow for that. We don't allow for edibles either, but what is allowed are tinctures, which we also have oils, salves, topicals, suppositories, things of that nature. No vapes as well, nothing that can be heated. But those medications will help patients. We have a 5% THC limit, which means that none of the products that are going to be available should be over the 5% THC threshold. We get a lot of pushback about that, but for chronically ill patients, parents and caregivers who have children and, you know, family members that could really use this medication, I tell a lot of the advocates, right now we have to work with what we have. But the problem is where we are now, we don't have any dispensaries. So if you're in a legislative position and you watch this, you know that there are still states that don't have access to medical cannabis, although the law's been passed. So with those six laws, you have two class one licenses and four class two licenses. And the only difference between the licenses is the amount of square footage of canopy space or plant space that's allowed to be grown. All our cannabis has to be grown indoors. Those licenses were awarded back in August, and it has been terrible since. There was a very significant lack of transparency during the licensing process by the Georgia Medical Cannabis Commission, which was appointed by some elected officials, the governor, lieutenant governor, and speaker of the House. There's a lot of investigations going on right now. We had about 69 to 71 companies that applied for the licenses, and six were awarded. And a lot of the companies who did not win a license are now filing protests, and they are also filing lawsuits to sue the Cannabis Commission in the state of Georgia for the lack of transparency in the process. So the problem is we've got all these patients, we have people who need the oil, but all this is doing is slowing down our process. So if you have any input on some ways that we could really help speed this up, if any of your viewers, you know, want to chime in, please have them reach out to me.
I definitely have plenty of ideas, and you know, there's a lot there to unpack, right? A lot there to unpack all the things that you covered there. You know, first and foremost, I think that's an understated fact about the influence that Atlanta has on the cannabis culture nationwide and how it's been able to push that, not just recently, but in past decades, right? I think, you know, talking about, I mean, I'm biased, right, from LA. So, you know, Chronic, Dre, Snoop Dogg, stuff like that. But I mean, going all the way back, you know, Atlanta, right? Talking about Outkast, talking about Ludacris, Gucci Mane,
yes.
You know, all the people, right? And so it's really pushed the culture and into the mainstream in different ways, you know, bringing it out and kind of making it on the tip of our tongues, you know, on clubs and the radio, everything like that. And kind of, you know, for priming us, right, for lack of a better term, right, kind of allowing this to be destigmatized and, you know, people growing up, you know, kind of not having that same kind of thoughts as maybe their parents had and stuff like that. That was, you know, in addition to that, you know, you also mentioned about how, you know, obviously not recreational use in Georgia, right, but I think the decriminalization has gone a long way in the sense that, you know, it's kind of something you look away, you turn the other way kind of thing, as opposed to this being another reason to pull somebody over, another reason to throw somebody in jail, another reason to you know, kind of incarceration rates and everything like that increasing. I think that's a huge step. I think that in a lot of ways, maybe a lot of states would wish that it was like that still, because the recreational use can be good, but it can also have a lot of issues in terms of how the bills are written, how it's rolled out, the different programs, and creating a lot of issues, which I think ultimately ends up helping kind of the legacy market in a lot of ways, right? And I think that's another thing there, you know, seeing as how with the medical program there's no smokables, right? I mean, we have to be honest with ourselves, right? I mean, we have to be honest. People like smokables, right? Even though, you know, 5%, I mean, I definitely I'm not in agreement with a lot of stuff, you know, for my home state of California, where it's just kind of this obsession with getting the highest THC rates. And I don't think that that's beneficial at all, you know, in a lot of different respects. And it's kind of like, that's kind of taken over the culture in that way. So, you know, but once again, you know, limiting it to 5% or limiting it to certain products and not smokables. I can understand the reasoning behind it. But I think what it ends up doing is ends up helping the legacy market, right? The black market, because people are going to find it whether or not they, you know, if they want it, they're going to find it, period. So either they're going to find it through the programs or they're going to find it, you know, the, from the way they've been doing it for decades anyways. So it's
absolutely. That's the main thing we've noticed, because patients who have gone to their legislators like, hey, I have my card. Here's my child that suffers 20 to 30 seizures a day. We need stronger oil. And the legislators' hands are tied. They're going to the black market. You have parents who are, they've literally become what we call cannabis refugees, and they've packed up their family and they've gone to a state that had safer access, such as a California, such as a Colorado, a Nevada, you know, some of those other states that have a little bit more softer programs. And this really doesn't help the state of Georgia in forward progression in the industry, because look just below us, you've got Florida. Florida is the number two medical state in the nation. So they're really setting a precedence, and they've proposed to, you know, an adult use program for the state of Florida. So it's time for Georgia to really step it up a notch. But currently, everything's in a holding pattern.
Yeah, I mean, and that's you bring a good point, right? I mean, parents, everybody knows, anybody who's a parent knows that they'll do anything for their kids, right? And absolutely, sometimes when you don't have access there, you're either going to go to, you know, the black market in your area, or if you know that you can go, and sometimes people are bringing across state, you know, and that's, then that becomes a whole nother crime, you know, where it shouldn't be a crime, right? All they're trying to do is to help their children and stuff, and having to do what they have to do, you know, having access there in Florida, like you said, Oklahoma, different places there in the area, where they don't have the same kind of tight programs in the same way, you know, you're just kind of setting up people for failure, you know, and kind of, you know, hopefully, you know, not much coming of it, but it's definitely not going to be helping. The whole point is to help the patient, right? So if they only, if you know that something helps a patient, right, they don't have limits on pain medication, right, you know, or anything like that. So
they don't have limits on how many cigarettes they can buy,
yeah,
or how much alcohol you can buy.
Yep, exactly.
And you make a really strong point when you mention parents crossing state lines, because these simple legislative efforts can be the difference between what makes a father of three a loving father and a convicted felon.
Yep.
You know, sometimes that those laws are really life or death. And you made a when you mentioned the people arrested for cannabis, like that drives a decrim. One of the things that pushed us here. We worked with the ACLU, we worked with Peach Street Normal, you know, several different groups to get comprehensive arrest data for the city of Atlanta. And we found out that 91% of all arrests for cannabis in Atlanta were African-American males between the ages of 18 and 35. So, you know, once you bring that to the light, you know, you have to do something. You can't ignore that, because once you ignore it and the numbers been presented to you, that's just implicit bias.
Yep. And that's kind of been, you know, going back to a topic that comes up a lot here, you know, that goes all the way back to the war on drugs, right? And it's like, I'm not sure if the war on drugs or a war on black and brown people, you know, kind of thing. And to increase incarceration numbers now, you know, obviously, you know, you're doing a lot of advocacy, and we'll get into that, and doing a lot there. And obviously, just in the beginning of our conversation, so much knowledge and experience here. Now, talk to me about your history with cannabis. Talk to me about your own personal history, and, you know, without cannabis, and kind of how it led to here to the Stanley Group and advocacy and CannaMedic and everything that you're doing.
So I realized after joining the advocacy fight here in Georgia that I am a real drug war veteran. I was actually expelled from high school for possession of cannabis. I got caught with a quarter, and they just made it seem like I was a drug kingpin. It was personal use. I didn't even tell anyone I had it. And I thought that was really going to deter my life. So after high school, I graduated. I went to the United States military. And after serving two deployments into the Persian Gulf, I actually was discharged for cannabis usage. I realized I didn't want to be a drunken sailor. Then I was in the United States Navy. They're known for heavy drinking and of copious amounts of alcohol. And I decided to smoke a couple of joints. You know, I don't regret those decisions. I look now, because I came home and I was able to go on to successfully become a firefighter paramedic in Metro Atlanta with Clayton County Fire and Emergency Services. And I had a very successful and decorated career up until 2014. I wasn't smoking as a firefighter due to occupational reasons, but I became ill, suffering some significant gastrointestinal problems beginning in the summer of 2014. And I saw lots of doctors, lots of specialists, pretty much any type of GI scan or diagnostic test. I had it done. I had it done again. And finally, doctors were pumping me full of so much medication. I just had to draw a line in the sand. I had got down to 121 pounds. I was unable to eat solid foods. I was very weak. It forced me to retire from the fire department. Doctors told me, listen, we don't know. You may have 6 weeks. You may have 6 months. You may have a year. We don't know. You're refusing to take all these medications and the opioids. So, you know, good luck. And I started doing my research. I took my knowledge basis from emergency medicine and anatomy and physiology and bridged it with medical cannabis and the endocannabinoid system. And it really showed me that we had a lack of fluid education in the industry, a lack of transparency. And I began to, you know, activate my activism. You know, I didn't know what to do at first. I joined social media in 2015. So prior to 2015, I had never even been on Facebook. I had never been on Instagram or Twitter, any of those platforms. Just wasn't something I was into. But I knew in order to push the cannabis conversation, I had to connect with people in other places, people that I didn't necessarily have access to. And when it came to the advocacy, there was no sense in reinventing the wheel. And someone commented on one of my posts, you know, you should really try to tap in with your local Normal chapter. At the time, I didn't know we had a Normal chapter. So I got involved with different advocacy groups here in Atlanta. And it led me down to the state capitol because I realized that if I wanted people like myself to be able to access the medicine, to also be a part of the industry, then I had to put myself in the room and make myself a part of the discussion. So I've worked on several medical cannabis bills. I've assisted on several and testified on several decriminalization bills here in Georgia and also industrial hemp. So really, it all came full circle through the advocacy. And then in January 2019, I was nominated as the Georgia chapter director for Minorities for Medical Marijuana, which is a 501c3 nonprofit. And I will be stepping out of that role here in the next month or so because I've assumed the role and title of National Director of Hemp Farming and Technology. And all it's done is continue to promote my advocacy and fuel my energy. So when it comes to actually doing the work on the legislative and policy side, I have no problem putting on suit and tie, going to my state capitol, going to city commissioners meetings, county commissioners meetings, meeting with stakeholders and policymakers, but also working to ensure that we're active on the streets. And I know a lot of people in the industry, once they get to where they want to be in business or corporately, or even financially, they sometimes forget those people who really need that support. They need someone to fight for them. So I'm constantly out actually in the streets. I keep like CBD pre-rolls on me that companies send me that I literally give away bottles of water, snacks. My Veterans Day just passed. I spent my Veterans Day downtown behind the Atlanta City Jail, working with some other nonprofits and giving out food bags and meal kits for the homeless. Because one thing that we have to do is we always have to give back. And sometimes we have to be the ones to make a change if you ever want to see a change. And it really just brought full circle. So once I became the CannaMedic, I've worked on such platforms. I've been featured on Vice, The Young Turks, Be Real TV, shout out to Cypress Hill. I've worked with High Rollers Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Big shout out to High Rollers. This is the cannabis infused jiu-jitsu tournament. And I've collaborated with universities such as Wayne State University in Ohio. I'm a member of the Medical Cannabis Patient Consortium and Brain Trust here in Georgia with Morehouse School of Medicine. So it's really just been a culmination of years of dedication, years of passion and work. And the number one thing that I tell anyone who's an advocate, advocacy does not pay, but it does pay off.
No, definitely. And if someone's getting advocacy to make the big money, they're in the wrong part of the industry, right? But I mean, you know, once again, a lot of great stuff there. You know, just speaking about what you said right at the beginning as well, right? So, you know, getting caught with the quad and getting expelled from school, you know, I think this kind of plays once again into, you know, the war on drugs and talking about, you know, 91% of those convicted or black males and stuff. You know, you did same thing happening to, I grew up in LA, but grew up in, you know, a nice part of town, Calabasas. And even though I'm a Mexican kid, right? I mean, it's still, I think I got afforded a lot of privilege because of that. You know, I got caught with stuff and it's like, oh, Maynard's a good kid. You know, you don't want to ruin his future and stuff. And it's just kind of this catch, you know, this this double standard, right, that goes into it, you know, socioeconomics and other things that go into it, where it's like, obviously I get caught and it's like, oh, well, let's not bust him because he's a good kid and we don't want to get him in trouble, as opposed to the other side where it's like, all of a sudden he's a drug dealer, he's a thug, you know, and we have to, you know, make an example out of him and all these kind of things. And that's kind of how it perpetuates in the system, I think, a lot of times. In general, you know, so, but yeah, in terms of, you know, the advocacy and talking about, you know, what you've done there and obviously your history as a veteran, you know, and what you're doing now, you know, just kind of being around the street and advocating and passing out CBD pre-rolls and whatever else it is. Talk to me how important that is for you now, right? You talked about how, advocating for those who don't have a voice, right? What is it? Why is it so important for you, other than the fact that you yourself are a veteran, to kind of be an advocate for this, for veterans, and talk to me about kind of the response you've gotten from veterans as a result?
Because I know that cannabis has pulled me through some very dark times. One thing that we are taught in the military, I know a lot of people understand that we're taught to be tough. We're taught to be strong, we're taught to be brave, we're taught to fight, shoot weapons, and be a warrior. But one thing that we're not taught is when we come home from war, we're not taught how to heal. We're not taught how to deal with the traumas that we've seen, you know, the sounds, the explosions, and things of that nature. And cannabis is one of the primary reasons that I'm alive today. I've had some dark times dealing with mental health and illness, and it really weighed a lot on me. And I truly feel that cannabis is not the end all be all, but it is a significant tool in a toolbox of overall wellness for our veterans. I've received a tremendous response from the veteran community. I realized that I didn't know when I was doing the advocacy and speaking as a veteran that there were so many veterans that I was being their voice. And a lot of them have, you know, reached out to me. I've assisted with veterans events, like one of my colleagues, Life Griffith. He's the founder of Veterans Health Solutions. You know, it's really about promoting the education behind it, but also letting veterans know that there are people that care. You know, I don't care if it's 3 o'clock in the morning before I want you to hurt yourself, please call me. Because some of the older data has stated that we lose about 22 veterans a day to suicide. And those numbers are slightly skewed because the only way that they're able to quantify a death as a suicide is if the coroner or medical examiner deemed it a suicide. But we all know that for many years, decades, the VA overprescribed opioid narcotics. So we have a lot of veterans that combine multiple drugs, whether it's the muscle relaxers, the benzodiazepines with the pain pills, and they may wash it down with a rum and coke or some vodka or something. And we're losing a lot of veterans to opioids and addiction. And cannabis is a strong tool for those veterans to use, whether it's for the sleep problems, whether it's for chronic pain, or even for anxiety. I tell people, as a military veteran, I've actually spoken in subcommittee at my state capitol, not only do I deserve the right to medicate naturally, I've fought for my country and I've earned the right to medicate naturally. And I think that more veterans need to stand up. There is more research being done now by governmental bodies to explore cannabis and how it may be able to help veterans, because the VA, which is the Veterans Administration, who provides health care for veterans after their service, they are completely, the one here is against it. They are in some other areas beginning to discuss it more openly with patients. But I've gotten a lot of flack from my healthcare teams. I've been hospitalized 3 or 4 times in the last year. And during one of my hospitalizations, they told me that I needed substance abuse treatment because I told them that I was using a tincture for my GI inflammation versus taking the pills. So to them, that was so far left that a person would rather take some drops than take pills, that they didn't want to accept it. And so if a veteran is watching this, if you have a loved one that is a veteran, you know, if they are consuming, don't shame them, you know, embrace them. If you can help educate them, please help educate them. And if you know a veteran who may, you know, be able to benefit from medical cannabis and you're in a state such as California, please don't hesitate to help a veteran, because without veterans fighting for the freedom of our country, no one would have a dispensary.
Yeah, no, definitely. And, you know, first and foremost, thank you for your service. And thank you for your service since, you know, since you've been discharged, you know, and then what you're doing today and, you know, literally saving lives. Like you said, so many people, it's crazy, right? You know, they'll show up to schools and do recruiting at high schools and get people to sign up before they're even 18, and deploy them across the world. And, you know, as you said, right, expose them to all kinds of traumatic events, and kind of put them behind the eight ball before they've even developed mentally, emotionally, right? And then kind of like pluck them right back out and try and place them back into society. And, yes. You know, and kind of just say, all right, cool, here you go. You know, and that's pretty much it, you know, and not giving them the resources they need to be successful at any level, right? Let alone mentally, emotionally. And just kind of like you said, over prescribing opioids and seeing how that benefits, you know, line certain pockets, and seeing as how, you know, there are class action lawsuits state by state now, multiple tens of billions of dollars, you know, state by state to in order to try and, you know, make amends, I guess, for the lives that have lost, as if money can bring the lives back. Right. But, in any case, you know, it's, and then, like you said, right, you know, telling your doctor, hey, I'm taking this tincture, I'm taking this THC here, and them saying, whoa, you need to go to therapy, or you need to go to rehab for that. Whereas if you had been saying, hey, yeah, you know what, I'd take a bunch of Vicodin, and they would say, oh yeah, great, how's that going? Here's a new prescription for you, you know, kind of thing. Now, you know, in terms of, you know, you mentioned it, and mental health, right? Mental health and veterans and how it plays in. I mean, you know, you mentioned that the cannabis can play a role in the anxiety and you know, and pain management and all that kind of fun stuff, things of that nature. But, you know, how do they complement each other's, I mean, obviously, you know, I think it's something that can help get people over the hump, right? I mean, what can we do to kind of help what's going on between the ears, right? In addition to what's going on in the body and helping to treat that as well, you know, with the mental health and helping people to overcome those traumas, emotionally, and long-term.
Now, one thing I do as a healthcare practitioner and educator, I do want to make sure that for everyone that hears this podcast and everyone that tunes in to you, we are not here to say that, hey, cannabis will replace all of your medications. No, that is not true. There are often medications that that need to still be taken. And we call that a polypharmacy approach. It's more than one way of medicating the patient. But if there is a way that we can alleviate some of the medications, that is great. And going back to what you said previously, you made an amazing point. And that's how you can tell someone who's versed in a developed market, because you made the notion that a lot of companies are going for the highest THC content possible. Everybody's trying to top last year's numbers. They're trying to top the competition. But I know that oftentimes the actual THC is what can cause some of the anxiety in some patients. It's not just about the whole THC, you know, how high you can get, because you have certain medical conditions in which THC, high levels of THC may exaggerate their medical illness. I know some people who, and I know some patients who cannot smoke sativas. High THC sativas, because it's the equivalent to them almost having a, you know, a paranoid schizophrenic breakdown. There are some patients that with high levels of THC, it produces a state of psychosis. So we want to make sure that we're educating patients, but we also want to make sure that with that education, we find what works for them. Everybody has what works for them. The strains that help you relax may not be the same ones that help me relax. And that ties into the terpenes, you know. So we really want to make sure that when it comes to mental health, we're not telling people to just, hey, smoke. You know, find what works best for you. For some patients, it may be an edible. It may be a gummy for someone. It may be a piece of a chocolate bar. So we really want to make sure that we're educating people on what you're taking, why you're taking it, and really what are the desired effects that you're looking to achieve.
3, 2, 1, 0, ignition, liftoff.
We at Calican are passionate about cannabis and CBD marketing, branding, SEO content, and web design. If you are a cannabis owner and you know you need an uptick in business or an upgrade in the way your customers perceive you, come check us out at calican.com and schedule a time to speak with us today.
No, that's a great point as well. You know, as you increase in the THC, all the other cannabinoids, the terpenes, those are all going down by the wayside, you know, and really, you know, we have an endocannabinoid system. It's not an endo THC, you know, I mean, THC is just one cannabinoid, right? It's not, you know, it's not the be all end all. It has its uses obviously, and but so much more. And like you said as well, right, everybody's body chemistry is different. So it's super important, you know, how it affects you and what you want it to help you with, what element you're looking to kind of alleviate a little bit there. So there's a lot of factors that I think people don't normally know about when they first go into, you know, a dispensary or wherever else they get their cannabis. And, you know, they got somebody at the front just kind of saying, oh yeah, you here, try this. And they go and eat this gummy and it knocks them on their ass, you know? And they're like, hell, what the hell was that? You know, it's so it's once again, you know, leading people down the wrong track on that. Now, I guess, you know, that brings me to another point, right? You mentioned here harm reduction. Talk to me about harm reduction. What does that mean? What does that mean to you? And then how does that relate to cannabis?
Harm reduction. Now we're getting to the juicy stuff. This is where we save lives directly. So harm reduction are measures that are taken by organizations and individuals to reduce the harm on the public. So an example of harm reduction is we have an opioid crisis here in America. A lot of people, I think everyone that I know has been affected in some way, form or fashion, whether it's directly or indirectly through someone they know, through the opioid epidemic. And we've actually had, I saw the CDC release the numbers. We had 100,000 opioid overdoses, opioid related deaths last year. And harm reduction, we wanna make sure that we provide education, but also resources. So some of the work that I've done in harm reduction is Narcan training and education. And for those who may not know what Narcan is, the generic name for it is naloxone, and it is an opioid antagonist. So if you're around someone that you see may be in a potential overdose from opioids, it can be administered multiple ways. It depends on the administration device you have. I actually have some trainers not in the room with me I could have brought on, and it can be injected into the nose, into the nasal cavity. There is also an auto injector similar to an EpiPen that can be used in the upper arm, the buttock, or even the outer thigh. And what this does is it actually reverses the effects of opioids. So if that person is, you know, barely breathing, shallow breathing, they're losing color, they're blue around the lips, you can administer this to them, activate the 911 system, and in a lot of cases, the patients begin to show signs of improvement. Now, there are some patients that require multiple doses. Here in Georgia, one of the reasons that I push so much for harm reduction is I've led several public health campaigns regarding opioids. I had one this summer because we had a 17-year-old female who died from a fentanyl overdose after ingesting what she thought was a Percocet, a 30-milligram Percocet. She got it from a colleague of hers, one of our fellow students. She thought it was real. She took it. It was her first time, and she died from an overdose. In that week, we had six overdoses in, I think, a span of 5 days in one general area. So we know, and legislative officials know, and law enforcement know here in Georgia, that a lot of the drugs that you find on the street, including cannabis in some cases and the vapes in some cases, contain traces of fentanyl. And that's why harm reduction is important, because anything that we can do that reduces the harm or the impact, the negative and adverse impact on our society, that may be one life that we saved. So through advocacy, education, training, it's really imperative. And it's really good that we're talking about this, because one of the initial concepts of harm reduction that I picked up from some people that I met at a conference years ago, it was out of Switzerland, where they had the supervised heroin injection sites, they realized that people are going to shoot heroin regardless of what happens. So the government opened up supervised heroin injection sites in which when the person arrived, they would receive a clean kit, a kit or the little tools they use to heat up, you know, tie off and inject their heroin. But they had healthcare personnel on there to monitor them. So one, they're providing clean needles, which helps reduce public harm because hepatitis and HIV and diseases like that are communicable diseases that are often passed through addicts sharing their needles. There's not a lot of addicts that have access to a drugstore. So many times in order to get high, they share needles. So they offer free needle kits. They offer medical personnel to help monitor the patient's vital signs as they consume. And when they finish, they can leave with a clean kit. They can also dispose of the needles in a Sharps container safely. In the course of the first 2 years of the program, they assisted with the administration of over 1 million hits of heroin, and they reported zero overdoses. So harm reduction is very important. Drug education is very important, and really trying to reduce the amount of the adverse effects of tainted drugs on the street. You know, it could be one of your loved ones. It could be, I have an 18-year-old son, and, you know, it could be anything these days. They can put it in a vape. It can be put into a candy. So really harm reduction is important to me because I just feel that if we can save one life, that one life may go on to save thousands.
That's incredible. You know, one life is an entire universe, right? So you save a person, you save the entire world. So that's definitely incredible there. And, you know, I think here, you know, some people, when they hear about it, they may think, hey, you know what, you're enabling people, you're giving people the opportunity to continue to use drugs or continue to whatever else, you know. It reminds me a lot of, you know, growing up and you have these sex ed classes. And, mm-hmm. you know, they don't have the balls to say, hey, you know what? You guess what? You guys are going to fuck, you know, here's some condoms, right? You know, they say, you know, be abstinent. Don't, you know, wait until marriage and then all these kind of things. And what does that lead to? It doesn't lead to, you know, all it leads to is, you know, unwanted underage pregnancies, you know, and then strayed on many different aspects of the communities and of society and all these kind of things, and kind of perpetuating situations as opposed to just saying, hey, you know what? Like, you guys, here's the tools you need in order to practice safe sex. You know, it's going to happen anyways. And this is what happens as well with cannabis, where people want, and with other substances, right? Where people think, well, you shouldn't be doing that. This is wrong. This is bad. And they bring all the stigma, right? Gateway drug and all kinds of things that have been, you know, statistically disproven. But it's just ingrained in their head. And it just does a disservice to everybody along the way, you know, and just perpetuates that for further generations. So harm reduction, that's amazing. You know, that's really, really amazing. And that, you know, doing there, right? It just seems so, it does seem off the wall a little bit, right? And I think you mentioned Switzerland, you know, just like giving people a, you know, quote unquote, safe space to come and do heroin. It's like, oh my gosh, like, what is the world devolved to? But guess what? People have been doing this stuff for, you know, for as long as we've been around, right? And this is going to continue on. So if you can reduce the you know, overdose and other diseases and other things that go on with needles, use needles.
I mean, and so something that a lot of people may not think about is this reduces the strain on your public health system. So your clinics, your public health clinics, your doctor's offices, your hospitals, if you've got 10 addicts in there for overdoses and you've got 10 people having heart attacks, you know, it's hard to differentiate who's getting what, you know, at the time. So if we could potentially, you know, alleviate that, it reduces the stress on an already overburdened medical system, especially here in the States. And you made an amazing point. And I had to commend you for that with the teenage sex, because you're right. They tell you either abstain or you're going to get all these diseases. Whereas here in Georgia, we have a very high teenage pregnancy rate, and we have public health websites that are sponsored by the Department of Public Health and their local health services. So it's the Department of Public Health and your local health community centers here, and you can go online anonymously. You don't have to put a name or anything. You can request a STD prevention kit, and what it is, it's a bag of condoms they send you a bag of condoms. It is every type of condom. So for people to say, hey, oh, I can't wear those. I need the really big condoms. Or, hey, I need, you know, little smaller condoms. They send you a packet of every type of condom. It even includes little packets, little individual packs of lube. So it's really helpful. And I actually ordered one last year to test the service out because one of my colleagues who works for the States was like, hey, we have these programs. Why don't you try it out? I went online, I requested it, and it came in the mail. So these services do work. And if you're someone who listens to this and you think that you may be at, you know, engaging in some risky practices and you may not have the money for those, why don't you look on your local health department's website and see if they have some of those programs? I assure you they do.
That's great. That's great. And hopefully evolving, you know, and changing our things from, you know, dated, antiquated kind of ways that just never worked. Now, you know, talking about evolving and changing, and, you know, we've talked a lot about your experience and advocacy, and talking about KineMedic, you know, talking a little bit more KineMedic and where do we go with that? And so here's your platform.
With the KineMedic, things are really ramping up. We're preparing to launch a product line. We've already got our first product, which is a topical analgesic roll-on product. It's going to be released first quarter of 2022. But we're also gearing up to release our patient recommendation program. So a lot of people who reach out to me on social media, LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, emails, we're going to be able to assist patients who are trying to obtain their medical cannabis card. Our initial program is going to launch in Georgia. We're going to be expanding throughout the Southeast. And we're going to potentially be in most states that have a medical cannabis program. I know that the country is continuously going to adult use. But one thing that I focus on is the medical lane, because we still have patients who are medical patients who are in medical programs and want to make sure that we provide the services to them to help them get on their medical cannabis journey. We are also gearing up for a symposium in June of 2022. Here in Georgia. It's going to be more so on the industrial hemp side. So the Stanley Group is organizing it in partnership with Minorities for Medical Marijuana. So please be tuned, stay tuned in, follow me on social media. We're going to be making some big announcements. And we're also going to be pushing more for veterans initiatives. We are working on some veteran design specific programming to really help veterans, not just in Georgia, but across the nation. I was actually slated to be in Boston this upcoming weekend to speak as the KineMedic at Major Bloom, but I had a couple of healthcare setbacks this week. And, you know, again, that's something that keeps the KineMedic very, very genuine and down to earth, because for anyone listening, for anyone watching, I am a medical cannabis patient. I'm in pain every single day. I've had 3 surgeries in the last year, but it doesn't knock me down. It doesn't stop me. I always look at it as my worst days or somebody else's best days. So anytime I'm feeling like it's a terrible day, there's someone somewhere that's wished they could feel that way. And that is really what keeps the KineMedic motivated and keeps me working. So thank you so much. And I'm going to keep it pushing because we've got a lot more projects. I'm probably going to be going back out to Las Vegas. I've worked with High Rollers Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu for the past few years. So if you guys are familiar, look them up. And it is the cannabis infused jiu-jitsu tournament. So the fighters actually smoke before they compete. And in our initial events, the winners of the division win a pound. So the KineMedic was the medic for their events, providing fighter safety and first aid up until earlier this year. So we're going to be re-engaging with them in 2022. So stay tuned. I'm very excited. I'm very humbled because there's a lot of people that aren't here anymore who gave up on their journey. And we're going to make sure we keep, you know, fighting for them, because every day that we're successful, people like yourself, people like myself, there's someone struggling that's ready to give up. And we're never going to stop fighting for those in need.
Great stuff. Amazing stuff. And, you know, it is, you know, going back to the great work you're doing, I can hear you, the emotion in your voice, you know, talking about the people that we've lost. And I'm sure people very dear to your heart, you know, as a result of that. And, you know, it's always, you know, what I've noticed as well, I haven't really talked about it much on the show, right? But how, you know, we talk about sports and how kind of slow adopting the sports have been, even though it's once again Why? Just because they're scared that they're going to lose viewership if people find out that the athletes are you know, smoking bud, right? It's absolutely crazy. Everybody knows that NFL players are smoking bud all the time, right? Everybody knows that NBA players and, you know, getting to certain levels now and different leagues, you know, allowing it at certain degrees and this and that, or not testing for it or anything else. But, you know, it's not the case with mixed martial arts, right? I mean, MMA, you know, Brazil, you mentioned Brazilian jiu-jitsu, and there's, you know, people who've spoken before. And I think MMA has just been realistic and embraced it. You know, UFC was the first one to kind of change their platform completely and just allowing people to benefit from it, not just, you know, through the plant, but also monetarily. And you see that a lot of the biggest influencers out there are MMA, you know, fighters and everything. So it's a completely different way of going about it. And I really hope that other leagues, other sports will take notice and, you know, adopt similar, you know, programs and viewpoints based on that, because it's been beneficial for the sport and for the athletes who are in the sport. And I think it would be the same thing for the NFL, for the NBA, for any other sports, you know, just to say, hey, you know what, I know this is, we're going to pump you in halftime, you know, give you an injection. And that's okay, right? But it's not okay for you later on at night to go in. You know, you see a lot of other stuff going on with drinking and getting in trouble. You know, no one's going to be going out at the club 4 a.m. and getting in accidents, you know, just based on, you know, smoking bud, you know, kind of thing. So in any case, that's my diatribe on that. But
some really good points. And we cannot bring up cannabis and MMA without paying homage to the gangsters, the forefathers themselves, the Diaz brothers. So big shout out to Nick and Nate Diaz. Nick Diaz was one of the first fighters years ago punished by multiple organizations for cannabis usage. He won the title in Pride Fight in Japan, but it was deemed a no contest because he tested positive for cannabis after the fight. He was the first fighter suspended for 5 years by the UFC for a positive test, when you can test positive for steroids and get, you know, 6 months, maybe a year. And they, him and his brother, really pushed the needle forward. If you remember, after one of the Conor McGregor fights, when Nate Diaz defeated Conor in the press conference, he was smoking a CBD vape. And now you see him at the open workouts, you know, smoking a joint. So we really want to say thank you to the MMA community, of all the athletes who really pushed it forward, because you've seen some of the announcement that UFC is a lot more laxed on it now. And it wasn't until I started working with High Rollers that I realized martial arts and cannabis went together. Because most people who do martial arts, they train every day, especially the Brazilian jiu-jitsu, the MMA fighters. So they can't be taking Percocets and muscle relaxers and things of that nature because they aren't able to perform. And I've seen what it does for recovery. I know it's a natural musculoskeletal relaxant, and you're going to see more organizations do less testing. I know the NFL has loosened its testing for it. I've not really heard of many NBA players being suspended for it. And I've seen some interviews and seen some data where it's different reports, but some of the very reports say that between 60 to 85% of the NBA consumes. I can't back that data up. I don't know. And we're also seeing that the NFL is funding research for concussions, TBIs, and how cannabis could potentially help that. So thank you for bringing it up. Big shout out to all the organizations. And let's shout out to Israel, because a lot of these countries and a lot of these places outside the United States are really pushing the narrative for research here in the States. So one of my ultimate goals is to go and study and learn in Israel about medical cannabis, because without this research in the sports, you know, and the because it's the neuro side of it for football. And they've learned that, you know, CBD and some of the cannabinoids potentially help repair damaged nerve endings. So if that is possible, think of all the athletes who have the concussions, the brain injury, especially in contact sports, boxing, rugby. We could potentially be saving the lives of people who put their bodies on the line for our entertainment. And I support that.
No, I appreciate that. You know, I'm really grateful, right? I get to split time, LA, Cali boy, you know, over here in Tel Aviv, and this is ground zero for cannabis research, you know, for decades upon decades, you know, and it's just continuing. And now, not just the research, but the investments and the VCs who are just focused on cannabis and growing that. And, you know, and sticking with it, you know, not just being a fad and moving on to the next thing, you know, real tech going on in Tel Aviv and throughout Israel. So I appreciate that. And anytime you want to come visit, you know, you're welcome. Welcome over anytime. So cool. Now, you know, sticking with kind of Medicare, you know, before we start wrapping up, you know, I guess what's been like the biggest obstacle facing that you faced with Kinematic, and how are you able to overcome it?
I think the biggest obstacle, and I know the biggest obstacle for me based where I am, is trying to present something to people that they've never seen. So California, other states, they're a lot more laxed. But for me, it was me trying to educate people on a side of healthcare that was inconceivable to a lot of them. So it was pretty much having to fly the plane while we were building it, because although I travel a lot and I speak in other states and I go to festivals and conferences and things of this nature, when I came back home, I found out that the dialogue, as you stated, you know, it's not as advanced in the South. And the hardest part was really creating that initial wave. And I'm glad now that cannabis is becoming mainstream. You know, you're seeing television shows on it. You have people, you know, pitching pilot episodes for TV shows. So the most difficult part was really trying to engage an audience that didn't even know what they were watching. And I'm thankful for everyone that's assisted along this journey. And for those who continue to support me, I genuinely support it. I'm thankful for each and every one of you. And I'm also thankful for opportunities like today to be on the Calican podcast, because it's about sharing the narrative. You know, no one has all the information, but if we can always share, you know, everybody takes something from somewhere else, that's how we can all put programs and put things together to really make this industry great before we lose a hold of it. Because you know that, as you stated, the venture capitalists, they're going in, they're rolling up licenses in multiple states, and they don't care. They're just corporate. They're there to turn a dollar. And we must be intentional and impactful, especially as we close out 2021 and go into 2022, because a lot of the major players, they've made their money in cannabis, and they're now shifting their money from cannabis to psychedelics, where they focus on psilocybin. Yep. So, guys, we got to catch up, got to stay part of the conversation.
Exactly. And as you know, I think there's, you know, in any industry, right, it's an industry, and, you know, an industry is supposed to make money. But I think, you know, the competition, when we're still in the state of fighting for our lives, I think we serve much better when we support each other and to help each other and complement each other in terms of what you're doing, what I'm doing, what another person's doing, and how can we, you know, make a greater whole, so to speak, right? So we can have more impact on the greater communities and the masses, right? Because as you said, right, the biggest obstacle has been what, you know, trying to present something they've never seen, trying to bring something out that a lot of people haven't been heard of, and they don't know, they're not aware of, they don't even know it's something they need, you know? So it's, you know, definitely an education point and everything like that. So definitely great stuff you're doing, and, you know, with advocacy, with the Stanley Group, Kinematic. So I guess, you know, moving on, you know, what can we expect from Kinematic here in the future?
We're going to be reigniting the Kinematic podcast, and we're going to be hosting a series of monthly health and wellness webinars. They're going to be streamed live on YouTube, Facebook, and LinkedIn. So if you guys want to tune in to that, be sure to like and follow at the Kinematic, and that is THECANNIMEDIC. And if you're someone who works in healthcare education, or if you're a patient and advocate, definitely feel free to reach out to me. And I would love to have you on, because it's really about being impactful in 2022. And it's really time to take things to the next level. So we're coming back out to the podcast, the monthly webinars, and we're going to be doing a lot more traveling. We slowed down things for 2020 in the face of the pandemic, but things are ramping back up. So you never know, I may be at a venue near you, whether it's a conference, a symposium, a webinar, or even, you know, out feeding the homeless. So if you ever see me out feeding the homeless, definitely stop by, say hello, and always remember that you can be the person that makes a difference in someone's life today.
Definitely check out Stanley, everything he's doing. And incredible dude, obviously, inside and out, you know, you can hear it here. This is the emotion, the passion that he brings, and the knowledge experience. So excited to hear that ramping up here in 2022 for sure. Now, you know, seeing as how you do have so much, not just cannabis experience, life experience, and been doing so much for such a long time, right? And helping so many people. You know, I'm always interested to hear what everybody has to say about success, but I love to hear what you have to say, right? So how do you define success yourself, Stanley, whether it be professionally, personally, spiritually? What does success look like for you?
One of the ways that what success looks like for me is you are truly successful in what you do when even your bad days are good days. You're truly successful when you're doing something that you're passionate about and you enjoy doing it. And I think another way that I define success is having the freedom to do what you want to do when you want to do it. So creating that lifestyle for yourself, whether that's as an entrepreneur, as a worker, whatever that is, you know, success is what you make it. For some people, their definition of success may be $1 million. For someone else, their definition of success would be to wake up and not have to worry. So for me, success is really having the ability to do what I love, help people, be passionate about what I do, and always ensure that I create the lifestyle that I want to live while giving back to others. So me being the most ultimate definition of success for me is for me to have unlimited resources to help others in need, and especially the vulnerable populations.
Love it. Definitely that freedom and being able to use that freedom and those resources to help others for sure. So now as we close, how can listeners find out more about Stanley Atkins, find out more about Kanamedic, find out more about the Stanley Group, connect with you, find out what you're doing and everything like that?
Yeah. So you can follow the Kanamedic. We are on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, and it is at the Kanamedic. Again, that is TheKanamedic. You can also send emails directly over to director@kanamedic.org. And you can also go to kanamedic.org, which is our website. It is currently down for maintenance, but it will be up within the next week or so to really correlate more information for you. So please follow us on Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube. We are on Twitter. I don't tweet much. And Instagram. I'm very active on Instagram. If you are on social media and you DM me, I am very cognizant to try to respond to all the DMs that I get. If you don't get an immediate response, please give me some time and I will respond to you. So for questions, inquiries, please feel free to reach out. And don't forget to follow the Calican podcast, guys. So if you're listening to this, make sure you support the platform in any way that you can. And share this video, share this audio, because you never know. Maynard offers some great information and you never know who you may be able to help.
Stanley, the man. I appreciate you. I appreciate that. So everybody also check out Stanley, I should say. And they have links here on the show notes here, whether on the website or on any of your favorite platforms that you're listening to it right now. So Stanley, I really appreciate you. I appreciate your time. I appreciate your expertise, and thank you as well, everybody out there listening, wherever you're at. Appreciate all you, and thank you so much, Stanley, and good luck to you the rest of the year and beyond.
Thank you, my brother. Thanks for the opportunity, and I send well wishes to you and your family.
Thank you. Same to you.
Thanks for listening to Dank Discussions. We are so grateful for each and every one of you. Please make sure you subscribe and leave a review. We want to continue making dank content you want to hear, so give us some feedback about the topics you want covered. Feel free to reach out to us at grow@calican.com. That's grow@calacann.com. And follow us on Instagram and Twitter for our latest updates.